The second case on today's oral argument calendar is number A19-109, State of Minnesota versus Jose Salud Botello Vargas. Counsel for appellant, you may approach and begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Andrew Leindecker on behalf of appellant Jose Salud Botello Vargas. This case is about safeguarding individuals' liberty and security interests from unreasonable government searches and seizures. Botello Vargas was seized unlawfully, and the district court erred in denying his motion to suppress and dismiss. This court should reverse that decision for three reasons. First, Botello Vargas was seized the moment the trooper parked his squad car at the base of the private driveway. Second, at that moment, the trooper lacked reasonable, articulable suspicion of any criminal activity. And third, at that moment, the trooper had not and could not have perceived any violation of the traffic laws. This seizure was premised on nothing more than a hunch. Now, in assessing the reasonableness of Botello Vargas' seizure, this court should apply a two-part test. The first question is, at what precise moment was Botello Vargas seized? The second question is whether, at that moment, reasonable, articulable suspicion existed to warrant a seizure. On that first question, Botello Vargas was seized the moment the trooper parked his squad car at the base of the private driveway. Minnesota courts apply the Mendenhall-Royer standard to assess the reasonableness of a seizure. And under that standard, a person has been seized if a reasonable person in the same position as that individual would not have felt free to terminate the interaction with law enforcement and leave. The subjective intent of the officer is irrelevant to that analysis.
And aren't there particular factors under Mendenhall that Minnesota courts refer to when answering that question?
Yes, Your Honor. It's a totality of the circumstances analysis. Generally, the two telltale signs of a seizure in Minnesota are if there is a show of authority by law enforcement or some sort of physical force or restriction placed on the individual's ability to terminate that interaction and leave. And on these facts, we clearly have that second category of factors that create a seizure.
Other factors are the presence of multiple officers. We don't have that, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Officers' display of a weapon, we don't have that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Officers' physical touching of the person.
Correct, Your Honor.
Or use of language or tone of voice indicating that compliance might be compelled.
Correct, Your Honor. But what we do have here is the use of physical force via the positioning of the vehicle at the base of the driveway that created a physical situation where nobody in Botello Vargas's position would have felt free to drive away.
So what about the cases where this ingress-egress issue has been addressed and has found not to amount to a seizure?
So, Your Honor, there are a couple...
Is this case different? That's what I'm getting at here.
Yes, Your Honor. There are a couple key distinctions between those cases and this case. In the cases such as State versus Hansen, where it was found that the stopping of a vehicle on a highway did not amount to a seizure, there was nothing preventing the vehicle from driving forward. In all of the cases cited by the state, the circumstances where this sort of physical positioning of the vehicle, of the squad car, did not amount to a seizure are cases where, directionally, the defendant could have driven away in a direction away from the trooper. But that's not what we have here. Botello Vargas was backed into a private driveway. The rear of his vehicle was right up against the side of the house. To the immediate right of his vehicle was another vehicle. To the immediate left was a collection of large garbage containers and recycling bins. The trooper pulled his squad car to the driveway such that he was directly facing Botello Vargas's vehicle. And from the dash cam footage, it appears as though there was little more than a single car length between the front of the trooper's squad car and the front of Botello Vargas's vehicle. So once this happened, Botello Vargas could not drive backwards, to the left, to the right, or directly forward to leave the driveway. That's a seizure.
Well, he could have steered around him to either side, though. Wasn't there room there?
It appears that there was room to kind of drive forward a few feet and skirt to the left or right and leave. But the question under Mendenhall-Royer is not whether it was physically possible to leave. The question is whether a reasonable person would look at that avenue of escape and actually believe that they reasonably could take advantage of that, and so doing would terminate the interaction in law, with law enforcement.
Describe to me the lights in relation to the way they're sitting there, because they're on the rear of the squad, is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. So the trooper, in addition to parking at the base of the driveway, activated the rear emergency lights. Our view is that this physical blockage alone amounted to the seizure, but the activation of the lights adds on top of that.
There's no evidence in the record, is there, that those lights were observed by Mr. Botella Vargas?
The record is unclear on that, Your Honor. There was no testimony at the omnibus hearing as to whether they could be observed or not, but there are a couple key things from the record.
And it's 11 o'clock in the morning, so it's light outside. It's not like you're going to see the flashing in the dark.
Correct, Your Honor, and that's why what's really critical here is that physical blockage of the driveway. But it is noteworthy that this vehicle did not have an overhead light bar. So the rear emergency lights were the emergency lights that could be activated. Additionally, the state argued before the district court that Botello Vargas could not have perceived those rear lights. The district court heard that argument, viewed all the evidence, and declined to make that finding in its order. And third, and most importantly, the state cannot identify any authority, because there is none, making a distinction between the activation of a rear emergency light and any other emergency light on a vehicle. The distinction that Minnesota courts have found significant in the past are between emergency lights in general and other lights on a squad car, such as a spotlight. But again, the key here is the physical blockage. Once a private individual who's sitting in a vehicle on a private driveway sees a trooper pull their squad car up so it's directly facing them, no further than I am to the bench at this time, that a reasonable person is not going to feel free to leave, even if, technically speaking, they could try and maneuver the car forward a few feet and then to the left or the right.
Even if this first question is answered in your favor, why did not the officer have reasonable suspicion at that time, reasonable suspicion of criminal activity in the form of a potential drug transaction?
That's a good question, Your Honor. There are a couple reasons for that. Giving the district court decision and the record as generous a reading as possible, at most there were three observations made by the trooper prior to the stop, in addition to that civil tinted window violation. The first observation is that the person who was in the driver's seat, who had not yet been identified as Botello Vargas, slumped down as the trooper drove by. Now, importantly, the trooper did not testify, and the district court did not find that this slumping over was accompanied by any other suspicious movement, any furtive movement, anything of that nature. So,
well, isn't slumping furtive in itself?
No, Your Honor. And the trooper and the district court found.
Did the trooper testify that it appeared like they wanted to not be seen or something to that effect?
The trooper did testify to something to that effect. But this court held last year in State versus Davis that acting in a manner suggesting you don't want to talk to or interact with law enforcement amounts to nothing more than a hunch, a guess, or a mere whim that individual is currently committing or about to commit a violation of any law. The trooper later testified to seeing furtive movement, and the district court later found that furtive movement was observed after the seizure had occurred. But prior to the seizure, there is nothing.
Or to be specific, I mean, after the trooper had parked his vehicle in the head-on position, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Yes. The second observation the trooper had made prior to.
Before you get on to the second, though, Mr. Leindecker, I mean, didn't the trooper know at the time he hurt? I mean, the testimony was he thought they were hiding from him when they slumped down. But he also knew that that house was a known drug house. He'd been there before, had seized drugs and guns from that house before. Maybe you were going to get to this, but he had been there a half an hour before, had identified another vehicle that had been shot up by gunfire, according to him. He ran the plates on it. It came back to a person that he had arrested a month before on a major meth deal. And And then he observes the license plate on the car after they slump and identifies it as being registered to Mr. Botella Vargas, who he had also arrested on a felony first-degree drug deal a month or so before that. So before he ever did a UE and came back, all of these factors have to go into whether or not he had a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, don't they?
Yes, Your Honor, you're correct that it is a totality of the circumstances analysis. If we address each of those factors or observations in turn, starting with the vehicle being parked at a known drug house near a vehicle that at some point in the past had sustained some gunfire. Mere proximity to suspected drug activity or even to a known drug house does not create reasonable, articulable suspicion.
Mere, I think, doesn't the word mere suggest that by itself?
Yes, Your Honor. But if you look at these other factors, we would submit that those factors collectively don't give rise to an inference that there are presently drug activities occurring in the vehicle. And in fact, the district court found that the initial basis for the stop was not suspected drug activity or any other criminal activity. It was only a tinted windshield. And that's all the trooper testified to as well.
Well, I think the trooper's testimony was mostly concerned with the history of drug activity. The trooper did mention the window tint as being what caught his attention, but it seemed like the hearing thereafter was focused mostly on the trooper's knowledge of the history of drug activity there and connected to the people associated with the house and the cars and so on.
Your Honor, I think that's right, that after the trooper had parked his squad car at the base of the driveway, that's when he began making other observations that gave him reason to suspect that perhaps there was drug activity or other criminal activity occurring. But if you look at the omnibus hearing transcript, the first time any discussion of suspecting contraband occurs is on page 19, which is after the trooper had parked at the base of the driveway, and that's when he sees a furtive movement, allegedly, with the driver's right hand. He does not actually state that he began to suspect a drug transaction until page 23 of the omnibus hearing transcript, and at that time, the trooper is already at the window of the vehicle long after Botella Vargas had been seized.
Of course, his subjective beliefs don't matter anyway. Do they? I mean, we're looking at this from the standpoint as to what was objectively reasonable.
Correct, Your Honor. It is an objective analysis. It is noteworthy, though, that the district court viewed all of this evidence, and this officer made all these observations, and from both of their vantage points, the reason this stop occurred was it was a tinted window.
I think we should talk more about how to interpret the district court's order, which I would admit that I am not totally clear on the reasoning or the rationale of the district court, but it seems like there's multiple reasons stated in the conclusion of law. But it seems to me that we have to interpret this order based upon the arguments that were made by the parties below. And I've looked at the defendant's memorandum in support of the motion to suppress filed post-hearing. It doesn't really focus on when the seizure occurred. It seems to assume, I don't know. It also doesn't really focus on the window tint. It basically argues that the trooper had no more than a hunch of criminal activity. He approached Mr. Botella Vargas out of curiosity. Curiosity is not enough, and so on. It doesn't seem to be. It seems like the issue was more about whether the information known to him concerning drug activity in the past and provided him with reasonable suspicion.
Your Honor, I agree with you that the briefing before the district court is perhaps not a model of clarity on these issues.
Well, I think the briefing's more clear than the order. The order refers to both window tint and knowledge of drug activity.
Right.
But it seems to me that the issue that was teed up by the parties was whether the knowledge of prior drug activity gave the and as well as the current circumstances gave
right.
the officer reasonable suspicion. So, I mean, I would read the order in light of the issues that were presented by the parties in the district court.
I think that is certainly part of the argument that was being made before the district court, Your Honor. I would also highlight, though, that in that motion to suppress, Botella Vargas argued that there was no particularized objective basis for invading his privacy by seizing his person. he argued that he, quote, was not acting suspiciously, nor was his parked car violating any laws. He invoked Terry by name and quoted the Terry standard. He also argued that, quote, it was impossible for the trooper to have seen his vehicle backing into the driveway. So you look at these arguments together, and what that is an argument that under Terry, this seizure was invalid because Botello Vargas was on private property where the traffic laws do not apply, and no laws, including no criminal laws, were being violated. Your Honors, the bottom line is that Botello Vargas was seized when the trooper parked a squad car at the base of the driveway. And at that moment, the trooper lacked reasonable, articulable suspicion of any criminal activity. The stop was premised on a suspected civil infraction. Your Honors, my time has expired. May I briefly conclude?
Yes, you may sum up.
A suspected civil infraction is inadequate to justify a Terry stop. So this court must reverse the denial of Botello Vargas' motion to suppress and reverse Botello Vargas' convictions.
One question. Just precisely when was the movement in the car, the slumping or whatever it is described as, when did that occur?
The slumping occurred prior to the trooper parking at the base of the driveway. It was during that initial drive-by before the U-turn to turn back around, Your Honor.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leyendecker. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Mr. Magnuson, on behalf of the state.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Peter Magnuson. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the respondent, State of Minnesota. A couple of things I want to touch on. With respect to the seizure, this court fairly recently decided Illy versus Commissioner of Public Safety, and I think it adequately sets forth what the issue is before us. And this is on page 152 of the Illy decision. Illy argues she was seized because the officer was boxing her in with his squad car. The argument fails on the facts. It is true that an officer's blocking of a vehicle may constitute a seizure because that sort of conduct might indicate to a reasonable person that she is not free to leave. And then a citation to State v. Sanger. But blocking in a car so as to execute a seizure occurs only when the officer actually positions his squad car so as to prevent the other vehicle from leaving. The district court found that Officer Crotius was not stopped so as to prevent Illy from pulling away from behind the truck. We rely on that finding because it is supported by the evidence. Same thing here. The district court heard the evidence and made a specific finding that appellant in this case was not prevented from leaving. He could have driven around the squad car. On either side, there was plenty of room for him to get out.
Analytically, can you help us? This case law, that body of case law we have about boxing in or blocking and so on, does that go hand in hand with the Mendenhall EDJ test, or does it sort of, is it terminate the Mendenhall EDJ analysis in some circumstances?
It's just one of the factors that is looked at. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember what the case is. There was a case where officers were responding, I believe they're responding to a bar or a restaurant, and they inadvertently park in front of the bar, and they inadvertently block the vehicle of their, it wasn't a seizure on those facts. So
do those other cases all involve apparent blocking in?
You know, the camera's only looking out the front of the car, so it's very difficult sometimes to follow. But as it's sweeping past, most of the cars appear to be covered with snow. And in fact, the trooper testified that the Hummer that he initially went to look at that had the window smashed out and the bullets in it, that was covered with snow as well. So as you're looking at it, the only car that's not covered by snow is appellant's vehicle. But yes, it's on private property, but I don't know that that changes the Mendenhall-Royer analysis.
If those were the facts, why did the officer have so much, or it seemed, difficulty remembering whether that car was there or not when he checked out the Hummer earlier?
Well, We don't have the squad video. We don't know which side he approached the Humvee on. I don't know exactly where the Humvee is directionally in relationship to appellant's vehicle. And the trooper testified that there were upwards of 20 cars there. I don't know why he didn't see it, and it wasn't really followed up on under cross-examination or redirect. We just have his statement that it could have been here. He just didn't see it the first time he was there.
But is the point of the seizure at the end of the driveway significant only on the window tint analysis as opposed to whether the officer had a reasonable articular basis to suspect other criminal activity?
Well, we did.
See what I'm asking? I mean, does it matter where the seizure occurred at the end of the driveway or when he approached the car if he otherwise had a reasonable articular basis to believe criminal activity, drug activity was occurring?
It does not. If the court resolves that issue and determines that prior to the trooper even stopping the car, because by that point in time he knew this was a known drug house, he had stopped people coming from that drug house before, he knew that the registered owner of the Humvee had an active warrant out for his arrest and he had previously stopped him and arrested him for carrying drugs. He had run the license plate of appellant's vehicle, knew that he was the registered owner and that he had stopped him 1 or 2 months prior to that and had arrested him for possession of a controlled substance and had a weapon in the car. And he had seen the slumping down, which the officer didn't testify that it appeared he was slumping, they were slumping down to hide. He said they were slumping down to hide. That was the only evidence that was presented on that issue. And that is an attempt to conceal, which by itself is not dispositive, but it is one of the factors and part of the totality of the circumstances. So at that point in time, yes, I think the district court correctly determined that at that point the officer had a basis. And this is in the district court's findings of fact. This is actually finding of fact 10. It's on appellant's addendum 3. It starts out talking more like a conclusion of law. Defendant claims Trooper Otterson had only a hunch when he drove past the residence, turned around, and parked in front of defendant's vehicle. An officer must have more than a mere hunch of criminal activity. And then the district court goes on to look at all the factors that justified the officer, that this wasn't a hunch. And that's all about the criminal activity associated with drugs, not with the window tint. The standard of review, I think, is dispositive here. The district court has made findings of fact, and this court can only overturn those findings of fact if they are clearly erroneous. And as I point out in the brief under the standard of review, the court must take those findings of fact and rely on them if there is evidence in the record to support them. There is evidence in the record to support every one of the findings that this district court made. An appellant can't point to anything that makes the district court's findings clearly erroneous. Essentially, what appellant is asking this court to do is to retry this case and to step into the shoes of the district court and reach a different determination based on these facts. That's not the posture of this case on review. Appellant must be able to point to some kind of evidence or a lack of evidence that would make these findings clearly erroneous, and there is simply no basis for doing that. There is evidence.
Still look de novo as, I mean, even if we accept the district court's findings of fact, don't we still look de novo as to whether or not those findings amount to a reasonable and articulable suspicion, don't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. But with respect to whether or not the appellant was boxed in, that's a finding, and the district court made a specific finding that he was not, that he could have left. He was not prevented from leaving. Therefore, that's off the table. You can't just come in and argue that, well, a reasonable person wouldn't have thought that. There's a finding, there's a determination that he could have left, and there's no case law that says a person has to be able to drive straight ahead, otherwise they're seized. To my knowledge, that case doesn't exist.
I have trouble seeing how a reasonable person would think he was free to leave at that moment?
Well, under the objective standard and the case law that has interpreted it that way, that's what the case law says, that a reasonable person would.
But all of that is fact specific, and the facts here are a bit different than the facts in the other cases.
I'm not so sure. The petitioner in Illy, if I recall correctly, would have had to have backed up and maneuvered to avoid the police car. As I recall, the petitioner in Illy was parked pointed at a delivery truck. So that would have required some movement for that petitioner to get around the squad car. So it's a combination. All reasonable articulable is a combination of facts and legal conclusions. But here, the district court made a specific finding that the appellant could have driven away.
District court also then, I think on the next page, 6, said that the officer had a reasonable suspicion of drug activity. Was the district court reasoning in the alternative?
Yes, because the district court was covering all the arguments that were presented. My recollection is that the argument made below was that appellant was seized when the trooper approached the vehicle, not before. I may be incorrect about that, but that was my recollection of it. So there isn't a discussion about the squad lights, whether the appellant could have seen those at the time. But as you look at the squad video, the trooper's car is pointed right at appellant's vehicle. You can't see appellant's rear view or rear lights. So if the trooper couldn't see the rear lights on appellant's vehicle, I don't know how the appellant could have seen the rear lights on the trooper's car. So if you can't see the lights, I don't know how that would come into the reasonable person test. Even so, under Hansen and the other cases that follow it, a reasonable person would understand that because the back end of the squad car is parked out into a lane of traffic, that those lights were activated to warn oncoming traffic of the squad's location. But under either one of those, I think the court can find that the appellant was not seized when the trooper parked at the base of the driveway. But even if appellant was seized, the trooper had a more than adequate basis for that seizure. I'd ask the court to affirm the district court's decision. If they have any other questions.
It appears not. Thank you, Mr. Magnuson.
Thank you.
Mr. Leindecker, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Andrew Leindecker for the appellant. I just have four brief points, Your Honors. First, Judge Floyd, you're absolutely correct that whether a trooper has reasonable, articulable suspicion of criminal activity, that's not a finding of fact. That's a conclusion of law, and that is reviewed de novo. We are not asking you to retry this case. We are asking this court to look at the facts as they were found, to the extent those facts were not clearly erroneous, and apply these legal standards to those facts. Second, the district court did not find and conclude as a matter of law that the trooper had reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity when he parked at the base of the driveway. In paragraph 5 of the conclusions of law on page 6 of the addendum, the discussion surrounding the trooper's observations when he's at the base of the driveway concerned this particular and objective basis standard, which is a standard from Cobb v. Commissioner of Public Safety that only applies to traffic stops, not Terry stops. And the rule under Cobb is that even if you haven't seized a vehicle, you still need this particular and objective basis to approach a vehicle. It's a lower standard than reasonable articulable suspicion. The reasonable articulable suspicion discussion comes in paragraph 6 of the conclusions of law. And in that paragraph, the court is discussing observations that the trooper did not make until he was at the window of the vehicle long after the seizure has occurred.
Paragraph 6 is concerned with whether the scope of the stop was expanded, right?
Yes, Your Honor. It seems as though although the district court is not precise as to the moment the trooper sees Botello Vargas, the suggestion, at least as I read it, is that at some point during that walk up the driveway is when the district court concluded the seizure occurred.
And is that really functionally any different from your preferred point in time, which is when the officer parked and turned on his lights, which was only seconds before? He didn't linger in the car, right? He squad car. He parked, put the lights on, pretty much got out right away.
Correct, Your Honor. The trooper did not remain in the car for a long period of time, but one key difference between the observations in the car and the observations when the trooper is walking up the driveway is the trooper's testimony regarding furtive movement that he observed after he had placed his squad car in position, but before he was at the window. The third issue I'd like to address is the discussion of Illy versus Commissioner of Public Safety. That case is factually different. There, the Jeep that was investigated had stopped along a curb in a parking lot behind a delivery truck. But the officer, quote, pulled behind the Jeep and to its left, stopping several feet away. That suggests that there was nothing directly behind Illy's vehicle, such that Illy could back up without having to do any sort of complicated maneuvers to get around the squad car. Instead, this case is much similar to Sanger and Markshausen v. Commissioner of Public Safety. In both of those cases, the defendant's vehicle was positioned behind another private vehicle, and the trooper's squad car parked behind the defendant's vehicle. In those situations, the defendant actually could not drive forward or backwards. We have that same situation here, except instead of it being another vehicle, it's a house that's blocking one direction that the individual could move. And critically, in Markshausen, that stop was also in a neighborhood. And in that case, this court noted that a reasonable person would not believe that lights were activated in a residential area for purposes of warning other traffic that law enforcement was there. Under Mendenhall-Royer, the standard is not whether you're physically capable of leaving, it's whether a reasonable person would feel free to leave. We're not disputing that it was possible physically for Botello Vargas to drive away, that there was room to maneuver around the vehicle. We are disputing that a reasonable person would feel free to take that route once the trooper had parked at the base of the driveway. Your Honors, this is a straightforward case. Botello Vargas was seized the moment the trooper parked at the base of the driveway. At that moment, no reasonable person would feel free to terminate the interaction with the trooper and drive away. The trooper lacked reasonable, articulable suspicion of criminal activity at that time because he was investigating a suspected tinted window violation, which is a civil, not a criminal, offense. That can and should be the end of this court's inquiry. Accordingly, we respectfully ask that this court reverse the district court denial of Botello Vargas' motion to suppress and dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leyendecker. Thank you to both counsel. Case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days.